I'm Jenna.
And I'm Jill.
And we're sisters who talk about gut health on the internet.
No, literally, we talk shit.
Because we believe that gut health is the baseline of achieving long-lasting optimal health.
AKA making sure it's you that controls your life and not your gut.
But let's be real, health isn't always presented in the most digestible way.
So whether you're trying to get your shit together,
literally,
or just want to learn more about how to take small steps toward a healthier lifestyle, you've come to the right place.
Welcome to our Gut Talk. Welcome back, Gut Talk fam. And if you are new here, hi, welcome. My name is Jenna, and I host this podcast with my older sister, Jill. And we talk a lot about gut health, but also so many more health and wellness topics. And we are just very excited that you are here. So today's guest we have is Mallory Rowan. She is a business owner, social media creator, course creator, runs a successful real estate business in Ottawa, Canada with her partner. She's also a business mentor, speaker, and wait for it, hit 1 million net worth by the age of 29. So Jill and I actually found Mal at the beginning of our social media journey, and she ended up being a mentor to us. So now having her on our podcast is a very full circle moment. Now, Mal has done a lot, from building a successful business that she actually burnt out from to then, as I said, creating multiple successful businesses while also focusing on her health and creating boundaries around her business and herself. In this episode, we talk a lot about Mal's burnout story. In her words, she says, "I built a global six-figure business and it almost killed me." So we dive deep into that and her whole story there. We also go into how her relationship stayed strong throughout building a business that she actually ended up walking away from. We also talk about the boundaries she creates for herself in order to stay successful while also putting herself and her health first, and the tips and tricks that helped her with that boundary. We also go into her alcohol-free journey. She's been now alcohol-free for 2 years. So we talk about that topic, why she made the decision, her experience doing it, her tips, and so much more about that. And Mal has really good recommendations, and we have a lot of trust in her, so we asked her to share her favorite books to improve your life at the end of the episode, which are really good recommendations that Jill and I are going to go download on our Kindle. So we are very excited to welcome Mal to the podcast. There's a lot of lessons to take from this episode, especially if you are someone who feels like you might be burning out in your business or your 9-to-5 or whatever you're doing. This applies to anyone, and we're very excited to have this episode for you. So without further ado, let's jump into it. Please welcome Mal on Gut Talk.
All the way from Canada.
Right? Yeah. Are you our first Canadian guest?
I believe so.
Yeah. Wow, big moment.
Big, huge. I love that.
It's so funny. I actually saw a TikTok this morning by a Canadian influencer, Strawberry Milk Mob. This is so random.
Oh my God, I didn't know she was Canadian.
Yes, yes. And she was saying there are so many differences between America and Canada, one being that it takes shipping so much longer in Canada. But then she was also saying that carrots are so much juicier and better in Canada than they are in America. And she was like, you guys pump all of your fruits and vegetables with poison, and like we do it the right way. So we have normal sized carrots. And I was thinking of you. I was like, how fitting with the timing.
Malintess.
Yeah. Have you had US carrots versus Canadian carrots?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely know like US restaurant food is like a lot for me, both serving size and just like the way that it's cooked.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe it. I know there's lots of small differences. I feel like people always think the most random differences exist in Canada, where I'm like, no, that's the same. Like, one time somebody asked me for your country music, and I was like, yeah. Like, we're not that far away, you know? But then there's other things that are like these really small nuanced differences that you'll like pick up on sometimes talking to people, and it's always funny.
Do you notice a difference in food? Like you just said with the restaurants, but is that something when you come to the US versus being in Canada, is that like a big wow moment?
Yeah. I mean, serving size 100%.
Yeah.
Like it always, we're pretty good at remembering now. I remember like early on, like Josh got an iced coffee at like McDonald's or something. And like, I think he got a large and it was like bigger. It was like 2 times bigger than our medium. Kind of. So it's like kind of that culture shock.
Yeah.
And definitely like serving sizes at restaurants. I mean, it's hard because it's just restaurant cooking in general, I feel like. But I find like when we eat out in the States, like I more often take digestive enzymes. I feel like generally, I'd say in Canada, maybe we're a bit further in terms of like accommodations with meals, of like you can do a bit more of like opting things out. It's less maybe pre-made in some places, you know? So if you're like, oh, I can't have this vegetable or this thing, they can adjust the meal for you.
Well, it's even like we see that in our lives, even though we live here, because we cook so much at home. And then when we go to a restaurant, I'm always like, why do I leave feeling, I mean, not all the time, but often, overly full, which of course you're going to indulge more when you're eating out, but I'll feel puffy because of the salt consumption. Right. And yes, we have to take digestive enzymes too. And I don't know. I'm like, is there, should we be doing something about this?
I do find in the States more, there's a lot more of like these like combos and stuff like that, where they'll be like, do you want this thing? It's basically free. And I'm like, no, but I don't want to eat it.
Right.
Like they, just like that part, they're like, but it's free. And I'm like, but I don't want it. Right. Like they'll be like, it comes with 4 eggs. And I'm like, can I just have 2? And they're like, it's the same price. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm just not going to eat 4 eggs.
So true.
They're like, gotta get all of your money's worth. I'm like, that's okay. You can have my 2 free eggs.
Right.
I love that. It's so funny just because, I don't know, we're obviously in Austin and I feel like Austin is very health conscious. So I don't think we notice it as much because of the places we go to. Like Jenna was at an event last night where they were celebrating removing seed oils from the restaurant. And it's like a super nice, great restaurant in downtown Austin. So we don't even see kind of the worst of it because we are in such a health conscious city, but kind of by design. I mean, that's part of the reason we stayed here too. Because if not, it's just... oh, it's so easy to just not pay attention to what's going on. But like, yeah, sure, I'll add the free biscuit. It's like, next thing you know, I'm like rolling out of the restaurant. I totally get that. Well, so most people probably don't know. Actually, I would assume no one knows that you kind of really helped us kick off our initial platform. I think Jenna found you, what, 4 years ago? You had really just helped us identify who we were. I think at the time we were still keeping fit real and we
were
to gut talk because everyone we were really focusing on the fact that like we're real girls, but everyone thought we were a fitness account. Like no, we talk about gut health. And so I'm like, how do we do this? Okay, gut talk. We talk about guts. Okay, perfect. Great. Yeah. But you were the person who really helped us identify like our brand and who we were. And like even today we're both wearing brown shirts and like we have our hair very similar because that's how people identify. It's actually so funny. These so many side tangents, but Jen and I just moved into a different apartment complex. And I always have my hair just like down and like natural wavy. I had my hair in a slick back bun the other day. And this guy who I've talked to 4 or 5 times at our apartment fully didn't recognize me. So like, and that's on branding.
That could be your undercover mode.
Right. I know. I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Throw on a hat and some sunglasses. And I'll
bring Duke with you. And you're,
exactly. We found you and you had already had this whole experience in business. You had started your own company. You'd burned out of that company. So I really want to start at the beginning. When did you first get into fitness? Let's start there.
I grew up in dance. So I feel like it was like competitive dance. So it was always kind of a part of my life. And honestly, part of it was like going more into university or college. I knew like, okay, I probably need to like step up my fitness level if I'm going to all of a sudden not be doing dance like every night of the week. So that was part of it for me. I started working out like honestly simply from that. At the time I was also doing pole fitness, which was fun.
Oh yeah.
Like, similar to dance, but more of a workout. So I was just kind of training in the gym to honestly just maintain and, you know, feel good. And then the more I was lifting in the gym, people would always tell me that I was strong. And I think it's just like a lot of women have strong legs, I would say, and also growing up in dance. So it was like, I could just squat a lot, right? I definitely couldn't bench a lot, but I had strong lower body. And so I would have people approach me and they would ask if I was a power lifter. And I, at first it was like almost became a negative connotation to me because I'm like, what do you actually ask me? Because I didn't know much about it. I always just took it as a comment that I was like bigger or something because there was a lot of like misconceptions back then around powerlifting. And then it wasn't until I started making more friends in the gym that were really into the sport that I started to see more what it was. And then that was really when I started to take lifting more seriously and also get into things like macros and like the whole nutrition side because I kind of naturally sat right above a weight class, which actually, interestingly enough, since I stopped competing, they've actually shifted the weight classes to like make more sense for the woman's body.
Thank you.
Yeah, so many women. I think Olympic weightlifting was always like 74 kilos or so. And for powerlifting, it was 72. And it's a big difference. And so many women sit in that like 74, 75 range naturally. So it was either like I was competing against women who were 84 kilos because I was falling into that category, or I had to cut. So I really started learning more about nutrition and macros from that side of things.
When you were in dance, was the culture around dance and food, was it don't eat, stay very skinny? Were you a part of that, or was there a different world of dance that you kind of lived in?
I think it's like, I find that tends to be very like parental based. Like I would observe that a lot. There was definitely very skinny girls and you could tell their parents were in control of their diet. Mm-hmm. My mom was the one like sneaking those girls candy. So yeah. I feel like my mom kind of protected me a bit from that, but definitely like I always felt like the bigger girl in dance, and looking back at it, it's so crazy because you're like, girl, you were not big at all. It's just that there's such a thinness in that world that just having like any leg, you're like, oh my God, I'm huge, right? But there was definitely that relationship. I think personally, I was able to avoid the food side of it, but I did definitely always just feel bigger growing up. I was like so conscious of like if we were doing measurements for something, right? And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to get measured. Like mine's always going to be the biggest, or need the most adjusting too, because I think also like a thin body can wear a lot of clothes really well, right? It just like there's not complications going on, but when you're like even curvy at a young age, it's like they have to make more adjustments. So it was things like that that I would just be very aware of.
So you went into powerlifting, former dancer. At what point were you like, okay, I want to take what I'm learning in powerlifting and turn that into a business?
Yeah, so I was actually like in class at university, and the year before we did a group project where you had to like make up this product and, you know, do this whole like brainstorm 50 ideas and then land on one. And we came up with this like toothbrush thing that had floss in it, you know, the classic like school project where you're just like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
And we just spent so much time on it. And I was like, this feels like such a waste of time because like I really don't give a shit about this product. And then the next year in class, they really encouraged us to actually like do something that we wanted as a business, which I always like really commend my school for being so entrepreneurial. They were like, if you already have a business, work on that in this class. So that was really what started it. And me and my partner, Josh, had so many ideas for powerlifting of like all these cool things we wanted to do, but we were like, okay, we don't know how to do any of that. And like, we don't have money for research and development. Like subscription boxes were really big at that time. So we wanted to do like supplement subscriptions. And then we're like, oh wow, like shipping proteins like really big and stuff like that, right? And then we wanted to do like the grippy shirts for lifting, but we didn't really have any capacity for like researching that. So we were like, you know what? We just want a way to connect other lifters with each other. Everyone was very socially conscious too. So we wanted to have like a give back aspect. And then we just kind of decided, okay, we could make a lifestyle brand that we really connect with. And it can almost be the base to then later do all these things, which I also like tell a lot of people, right? Build that community first, even in today, or if you have a budget, like building that solid community that's just based on community before launching products can be so great. So that's really what we started with. And then that just took off so much because I think it really was filling a need at the time where people weren't feeling connected to each other in the community because it was really growing fast, that we never ended up doing any of the subscription box type stuff. We really just became the lifestyle brand of powerlifting.
And what is lifestyle? Is that clothing? What is that?
Yeah, basically clothing that's not giving you like, it's not any type of equipment or competitive edge. So for us, we would be like the t-shirts that people wore under their singlets on the platform, or the hoodie they were warming up in, the stuff they were wearing in the gym. And it was really cool because a lot of people would meet new people at their gym because they were both wearing the brand. And it was like this moment to be like, oh, you're a power lifter. Like, I'm a powerlifter too.
And is that kind of what differentiated you from the other lifestyle clothing brands in the fitness world at that time?
Yeah, I think really niching down to powerlifting. I think at the time too, a lot of the culture that existed in powerlifting was very much like skulls and like hardcore metal and like that kind of vibe. And we were coming in and we're like, well, we love powerlifting, but like that's not really who we are at our core. So we were trying to build something more minimalistic that felt like us, that really had that like charitable aspect. And I think so many people connected with seeing a brand where they were like, wait, that feels like my version of powerlifting.
Yeah. So how long did you run that company for?
I think 4 years. Like, it really took off like crazy. We started it as a side business, both in school. And then when we graduated, I graduated ahead of Josh, but both of us went into full-time jobs and we're running it on the side. And then it just kept growing and growing. So we ended up leaving our jobs to do it. And then it was probably a year after we had left our jobs where we started to reevaluate, like, okay, how do we feel about this? Like, it was just such a quick ride. And then that was also when my health started to deteriorate. So it forced me to take a step back and be like, okay, I need to look at what we're doing here and how we're doing it. And then it really prompted us to be like, okay, what do we want going forward?
What year was it?
So the business we started in 2015.
2015, okay.
It was like peak fitness Instagram of you could like 3 posts of somebody and they would follow you. We used to sit in bed. That is like how we built our community. We would look up like a deadlift hashtag and we would just engage and like comment. And it was genuine, but it was like on super speed. And it was like crazy the way that people would just follow.
Okay.
And then how long after you started the business did you start to feel the symptoms of burnout? Not saying you even knew that you were burning out, but when did things start to happen?
I mean, more aggressively, like 3 years in, I'd say, but I think there was a lot of the underlying that came before. I mean, realistically, I was like training at a national level, still in school. I was working for a startup while I was in school, and then we started this, and I was teaching dance on the side. So it was like, I feel like even on paper, the signs were there of like, this is going to self-combust. Yeah. I definitely started to feel it.
What physical symptoms or mental, emotional, whatever it was, what did you start feeling? How did things compound?
Yeah, I think when it became obvious to me, I went to the doctor because I had a really bad cough. And actually, I think I went for something else. And then I was like coughing there. And she was like, how long have you had this cough? And I'm like, I don't know, because I have asthma too. So I'm like, I kind of always have a cough. And then she's like, oh no, it's like pretty gnarly. So I ended up finding out I had pneumonia. And that was like a big moment where I like stepped back. The fact that I also like just didn't even register it, because I feel like it was just so slowly compounding, where I was like, what do you mean? Like, I always feel like shit. Like, this is just the hustle, you know?
It sounds so silly to people listening, but when you're that thick, like deep into something like pneumonia, you just barrel through it. It's the most insane thing.
Yeah. You're like, I'm tired.
Yeah, I can barely breathe. Okay, next. Okay, so what else? So you go to the doctor. Yeah. She says you have the pneumonia. And then I'm assuming you didn't just like pack your bags and stop right there.
No. So like, what was really interesting for me was like, it felt like such a relief to hear that. One, in that you're like, oh, okay, there's like a bit of a reason that I do feel so horrible. But for me, there was a lot of pressure in powerlifting because my partner and I were both strong. People were like really kind and loved to cheer us on. But obviously, like being a brand in powerlifting, it kind of compounded to have that pressure of like, oh, I need to be a top lifter. Because people used to always say like, oh, we love how you're actually like really part of the community, which in hindsight, like you are whether you're a top lifter or not. But it was definitely a bit of that self-imposed pressure. So I remember feeling so relieved of like, oh, I actually can skip provincials, which would be like a state championship, which in theory, I could have got a medical note to like go to nationals. But I just kind of used it as my out of like, oh, if I don't do this, I can't do that. And it buys me some time, because I could definitely feel like my body was breaking down. And it was as simple as like, I'd be doing warm-up lifts and it was hard. Like things were not moving. And then it was just such compounding anxiety of like, I have a big squat today. If I can't hit this, what will I hit on the competition day, right? So that was like a lot of what was happening internally. My hair was like really thinning in spots. Like I found I was kind of getting like some bald spots, and I have baby hair, to be honest. Like it's just thin and blonde. So I don't have a lot of hair to lose. So it was like a lot of like, I was trying to put my hair up in ways to cover it. I'm like, I have no hair to cover it. I also found I was getting like marks really easily. So I would go to like a hack squat. I would hack squat, and then for like a week I would have like red lines on my shoulder. Like I could just tell stuff wasn't working properly internally, because I'm like, it shouldn't have been leaving those marks, you know? And then I also got really bad rashes on my face that just like were so irritated. And it's really hard, because those are the kind of things where like the advice is so siloed, or they'll be like, are you stressed? And you're like, I don't know, but like, is that gonna fix it? Like, can you give me something? But a lot of those things were things that like were not easy to fix. And especially with the pneumonia, we went through a few rounds of antibiotics, and then we did a final chest x-ray where she's like, you're good. And I was like, okay, but I'm not good. Like, I still sound like my lungs are so gross and like I wasn't feeling good. And that's really what forced me to step back and be like, okay, I have to make some other changes.
And how did that conversation go with Josh, your partner? Because he was in it with you, right? Mm-hmm. Was he experiencing burnout symptoms as well? Or was he still ready to go?
He was ready to go. So like...
Okay.
This is like a man versus women thing. Yeah, like, let's
Josh
be real.
Is, like, peak Superman. Like, we've since realized, like, his... One of his top skill sets is, like, he's such a born athlete. Like, the first time I ever took him for a massage, she was like, oh, it feels like you got a massage yesterday. Like, he has, like, negative amounts of, like, knots, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that was actually something that held me back in a way of, like, noticing some of the signs. Because people would say, like, oh, you're traveling a lot and stuff. And I kept being like, but so is Josh. And so for me, I knew I had things like eczema and asthma, but really taking in, like, I feel like my whole life I've tried to fight to like pretend I'm at the same baseline as everyone. And that was really a moment for me to be like, okay, I actually have a different baseline than this partner who's doing all the same things as me. And that was something that, yeah, it was hard because I kept dismissing that because people would be like, oh yeah, you're like traveling. And I'm like, yeah, but he's hitting a squat PR. So like, it's not the travel, but it's like for my body, it was a big part of it.
I think that's so key to emphasize because just because someone else can function on 6 hours of sleep a night doesn't mean you can. Or just because someone else can eat gluten all the time doesn't mean that you can. It's so individual to your body. But I feel like we compare ourselves to others all the time, especially when it comes to workouts. Like, oh, well, she goes to Barry's 5 times a week and like she's good doesn't mean that right. You are.
Well, and also like, is she good? And this is not like a hit on those people,
yeah.
But like you were saying, you're sitting here dealing with pneumonia and you barely even are noticing it, right? You're just kind of like swiping it under the rug and saying, well, I just have asthma and these symptoms are typically normal for me. But where is that baseline, right? Is that normal or is that just something that you've experienced when you're actually not a healthy person in that moment? So take us through, you have this, what I'm seeing is like, you're identifying with this business, with the powerlifting. You're sitting here and you're like, this is my everything. This is my life.
Well, and you're also, that's how you're making
your income,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What happens? How do you get out of this place where you're like, okay, this I can't do this anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. So on like the physical side, it really did buy me time to not have nationals in a way. Like, so that timeline looked like, I think in, let's say September, I had pneumonia and then the provincial championship would have been like October and then nationals was like March. So I kind of bought myself, which in that period when everything's so like go, 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 like September to at least March, if not longer, because you're not going to compete right after nationals. So it was kind of nice to have that physical break. And then for me, it helped to have like something to just like push it off when it came to public conversations, which I think can be really important of like knowing where you're comfortable sharing. Because even after when I shared a lot about my burnout and I even shared photos of like the hair loss and stuff like that, like people were like, oh, you're so brave. And I'm like, no, but like, I'm good now. Like I could not have shared that in the moment, you know, which I think is really important because sometimes we see people share those things too. And we're like, oh, wow, like I'm keeping all that in. But recognizing like you're maybe at a different place with it. So for me, I would tell people like, cause they were just, you know, engaging conversations like, oh, when are you going to compete next? I'm like, oh, I'm probably going to do a meet in the summer. And it like gave me again, enough time where I'm like, maybe I will. Like, I think partially I was lying to myself, but it was good to have an answer that was like, I'm covered until summer to figure out like what's going on with my body. If I even want to compete, I think something we realized too, like you said, it became our everything, which was really fun in a lot of ways, but it was like for both of us, the gym was the place where everything shut off. And it was like, you know, your solitude, you can just work out and like not think about life. And now the gym had become my work in some ways, right? Like even in terms of you're filming your lifts to post it. So then it's extra pressure if it doesn't feel like it's moving. You're also running into a lot of people. Again, it's fun, but it's like now this space that used to be like headphones in, my only place to tune out. I didn't realize how much taking away that space and not replacing it with something else. I think that was it. It was fine that it shifted. I just didn't have another place that was like my solitude, which I think is so important to have. That springtime was kind of when we started thinking about what's the next steps for the business. At the same time, we were also having a bit of a disconnect of like, we were loving the stuff we were putting out and our collections were getting bigger and bigger. And then we were like, oh my gosh, there's like so much to produce. Like I would compare it to maybe how you guys would feel like on social right now. If just like, you might love a video you put out and then the next day you're supposed to put out another video and you're like, oh my God, but I love that thing. Like it's a little bit like your art sometimes, right?
And you have this whole community and these people yeah. encouraging you and waiting for the next drop
yes.
and seeing what your next move is going to be. And so I'm sure like it's very hard to shut off the noise and like genuinely tune in to what you truly need when you have other people counting on you. Did that play a big role?
Totally. And I think like we did a really cool fall collection, like I said, that was like a little more like complex. And then for winter, I wanted it really simple. And then I would just like look at it and be like, is this boring? Like, are people going to see this and be like, that's just your name on a shirt, you know? Like, so it was a lot of pressure.
When something becomes your everything, which is kind of what the powerlifting world became, did you have this moment of, holy shit, who am I? What do I do next? Or did you already have something lined up?
No, it's definitely a who am I? But I think it helped to have kind of that like slow bridging of like giving ourselves that space for stuff to happen behind the scenes. After we did that winter collection, I remember like for nationals, we would normally have done like a big new collection at nationals. And instead we just made like one shirt that was specific to nationals. And that was us even on the inside, like easing out a bit of being like, okay, this is a lot. We're not sure where we want to go next with it. We were at the time, like, I remember it was Josh who was just kind of like, what if this was the end of this business? And at first I was like, oh my God, no, like, are you crazy? Right? Like I was so attached, but then it was almost like a seed that got planted that once it was planted, I was like, oh, you know, you're like, okay, that actually feels kind of good. And then it felt like there was almost no other choice. It just felt so right to be like, maybe this is the time for us to move on. We made those decisions kind of behind the scene and like phased out a little. There was a big event we would normally do in June. We decided not to get a booth. And then at one point we honestly just like posted an Instagram post and we were like, hey guys, this is what's happening. Like, we don't really want to be part of this like super consumerism vibe anymore of like launching these massive collections nonstop. Like, that was part of it too. I felt like I had enough of our apparel, but then it was like, we're supposed to do more and more and more. Like the new collections, like I wasn't even taking anything from them because I was like, I'm good. Like my closet's full, you know? So it really made us think about like that impact we were having too. And that was really what ultimately led us to the decision to kind of move on.
And how did your health evolve from there?
Yeah, I worked with like so many professionals after that, trying to get back to like that baseline. So I did work with kind of like a health coach where we were doing some gut stuff. I did a lot of sensitivity testing, trying to get things back to zero. So that was really helpful. And then on the like mental side of the identity, I let myself take a bit of a break. So it was actually interesting because Josh in that process had realized he wanted to become a realtor. And it was an interesting moment because I almost felt like I got left behind. It was like we were doing this thing together. And then he was like, oh, I'm off to the next thing. And then I was like, wait, I don't know what the next thing is. But what I ended up doing was social media was always firsthand to me. Like that's how we built our business. So I decided to actually give myself some space over that summer to be more intentional about what was next because that business really snuck up on us and just took off. It felt like I really wanted to think through more intentionally like what I wanted to do next. So I just got 2 clients in my city. I ran their social media and it was really nice to just have this option where I was still working on my own time, but my bills were paid. And then I could spend some time to really think about like, okay, what do I want to do next? What kind of impact do I want to have on the world? Like what would feel really good?
The thought that keeps popping up through my head through all of this is it's incredible that you and Josh stayed together through all of this. Like I just keep thinking about that.
That's
because
so funny.
Right? Well, okay, hear me out. You guys, one, were in university together, which I think a lot of couples, most people had that, right? But then you guys transitioned out of university, which that alone can be hard.
Yeah.
But then you started a business together. Then you left a business that maybe he didn't even really need to leave.
Yeah.
And then you guys found new channels. Like, to me, I don't know. Like, I commit.
Jill's like, yeah, I'm crazy. Yeah.
But I know that this isn't a part of, like, the business burnout story or anything like that. But do you feel like you just had to have really honest conversations and they just kept aligning? Or, like, talk to us for a second, because I think that's so commendable that you guys those are really hard things to survive. Like, when you don't know who you are and you're still able to stay with someone else as you're having that moment.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like,
oh my God, that's so nice. Like, this is a nice perspective.
Right?
I love that. No,
I agree.
I've had that thought like 5 times as you've been talking, like, and they stuck in the middle.
Jill's like, I would have been out.
She's like, you were a mess. Let's see you later.
No, I think to myself, like, the guys I've dated in different parts of my life, mm-hmm. I don't think they could be with me today because of how I've evolved. But it sounds like you guys evolved together. So can you, I mean, now that I've given you that perspective, can you reflect on this?
Well, it's interesting because I always wonder that about friend groups. Like, it's hard for me to understand when people are like, their main friend group is still like their high school friends or their university, because I'm like, I've changed so much. So it is interesting that I always say that about friendships, and then you're right, I'm like sitting here with my best friend basically still on the same page. I think for us, like, we did the like are we friends dance for like 8 months of like we just became like best friends and training partners. And then it was one of those, like, everybody else was like, oh, are you guys dating? And we were like, we weren't ever saying, are we more? It was just, like, clearly in the air. Other people would, like, think we were dating. And we were like, what? No, like, that's so weird. We were like, okay, we're just friends, but let's still start this business together. That part is really blurry to me. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. He also wasn't even in my class. Like, it's still unclear to me how we ended up doing this together. I know our class did say, like, oh, if you have a co-founder that's outside, like, you can work with them. But I don't know if I just went to the gym one day and was like, do you want to do this? Like, I have no memory of that part. But we were like, no, this is a great idea. Like, let's just pretend to be friends and let's, like, still do this business. Which I think was probably both of our ways of just, like, holding on to the hanging out. And then we very quickly realized we were more than friends. But I think just having a business from the start, like, you have to have so much open communication when it comes to a business, as, like, you guys would know. So I think it really just, like, kicked off the relationship that way of, like, we really needed to know how to work together. I also obviously think there was, like, a natural just, like, flow that worked there. I always say, like, when people ask about working with your partner, they're like, oh, I could never do that. I'm like, I think it's just, like, when it works, it works. And if you don't think it would, it probably won't, right? So for us, we had to communicate about everything. It was like, you know, how are we going to pay for this thing in the business? Or what's this shirt design? Like, everything was constant communication. Even things like, oh, do we need a bigger apartment for, like, inventory? What are all these decisions we're making? And so I think from the start, we were just really, like, a team from the start.
No, I love that.
Yeah. And what you said, too, about him always being open to learning. I think that that's something that men more than women struggle with is being comfortable embracing this unknown and saying, hey, like, as your partner, I think I'm changing in this way. And I used to really love going out every weekend. And now I kind of want to go to the farmer's market. And, like, will you try this with me? Or can we find a different way to spend our time? Like, that's really scary, just like it is to leave a business. Because when you're faced with this unknown, it's almost comfortable to, like, hide behind whatever your identity was, which for a lot of people is going out on the weekends, being the party person, being the fun person. And being willing to say, sure, we've been doing this, but, like, yeah, I'll try this with you. I feel like that's such a unique, like, skill. I don't think you see that very often.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's such an important skill. Like, both of us, I think, really love change and get excited by the idea of change. We understand that change results in growth. And I think you're right. Some people, it's really hard to let go of an identity of yourself that you once knew because it feels comfortable. But if you can be open to, you know, easing into that. I also feel like when you run a business, I feel like you live, like, 7 lifetimes in the same time span, right? Like, I'll look at 2 years or 4 years of my life, and it's like, I can't imagine what 4 years from now could look like, because it just feels like so much has happened. So I think that's part of it. We're very much in that time warp together, versus, like, I think if one of us was just not self-employed or had a different perspective, I do think it would be really hard.
Yeah, and like both of you, to me, especially like watching you on social media and like obviously knowing you personally, you're both very entrepreneurial at heart. You guys know what it takes to grow and build successful businesses. But then this is the really refreshing part that I want to go into a little bit more is like, okay, so now we're fast forwarding to what you built presently, which are large businesses doing really well. I mean, you say it on your bio, so I'll say it out loud. 1 million net worth by 29 is a huge feat and something a lot of people have not experienced. But you've done that, as you said, by also doing the personal growth journey that I'd like you to talk about, because I think that's what truly has set you up for success. Will you go a little bit more into how you've balanced building successful businesses, but also taking care of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think burning out is like the fastest thing to get you sometimes to not burn out again, right? Because you get really clear on those non-negotiables. And like, that's one thing for me that like, I have just super hard non-negotiables. And I think sometimes people will take that as like, oh, like I have to read it every morning. But I think it's less about the specific elements of it. It's more about like, okay, I have non-negotiables in that like, if I can feel myself feeling a certain way about my business, if I'm feeling constantly like if I'm getting Sunday scaries, I know that's a problem. So it's like checking in, right? Because if you're the one that like makes your Monday, there's an issue if like you're not feeling excited about the business, right? So it's like having those non-negotiables of like, I don't want to feel that way about my business. So, okay, how are we going to build that in? And really understanding yourself on like a bigger level. I think especially now we're seeing a lot of people like quit their businesses, you know, go back to 9-to-5s or just like disappear from the internet, take sabbaticals. So I really think like the personal development side is such an important piece because I think it's so easy to chase the money and then you build something where you're like, wait, what is this? I hate it here. You know, yeah. Like you've maybe fallen into the trap of like, oh, a certain type of your content goes viral. So you start primarily doing that. And then you're like, wait, now I'm the girl that talks about this and I never wanted to be. I think that's really, really common of people kind of lose themselves in this like metrics game. And then they build the thing that like they weren't even trying to build. And so for me, it's been like a, like, give and take of sometimes it feels frustrating of like, I do have such hard limits of being like, I don't want to do that because I can see the path that it ends up at. But I think that's why I've been able to like stay self-employed and continue this business is I've been really clear of like how I want this business to serve me, what kind of things are important to me, like what I want to offer, but also like what my life looks like outside of my business, right? I think it's really looking at how your business fits into a bigger picture and constantly doing the gut checks. Like it's almost like so annoying because you'll be like, oh my God, there's like another next chapter coming of like, you can feel yourself changing. But I think the less you resist that, the more the next chapter looks better and better once you get there.
Can you list your business and personal non-negotiables? You don't have to list them all, but list a few.
Okay, so one for me is like, I don't have anything booked in like evenings or weekends. So it's not necessarily that I don't work in evenings or weekends. I would say generally I don't, but then I always leave that room. And this would be an example of like not having that hard tactical non-negotiable. It's like if I feel really inspired and excited about something on a Sunday morning and I'm chilling at home, like I'm okay if I want to have a big brainstorm session, right? Or if I'm like really enjoying editing a video on a Thursday night. I find in the winter I work later into the evenings because it's already dark at 4 o'clock. Like, you know, it just feels the same if it's 7 o'clock. But I think like I, even with podcasts and stuff, like some people only record in the evening and I've learned to be less of a accommodator because I would normally be like, oh, okay, like I can do it at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday. And then I spend all of Tuesday and Wednesday dreading it. So I've really learned that sometimes I can say like, hey, is there any chance we could record this in the day? And they're like, yeah, no problem, right? So I think like that's one thing I learned is not booking things in evening or weekend. I also found for me in my week, like I don't book any things on Monday or Friday or Wednesday if I can. Like Tuesday, Thursday, I like to be like, I'd rather be back to back for a full day. And my only job is like showing up to those calls. Because I've learned about myself, like if I have a call, let's say at 11, I might not really get anything done till 11. And then I'll just be like anxious and be like, oh, I just wasted hours. So if I do have calls, I try to do them all on one day. I always keep the Mondays for me. And then Wednesdays will be like, if I have to go somewhere in person, I try to put it on Wednesday. So sometimes it's just things like that where you can put these routines in where you don't even have to think as hard. If someone's like, are you free for coffee? I don't have to like look at my whole calendar. I'm just like, next Wednesday. Right. So things like that in like, I don't know if that's business or personal, but like in terms of scheduling with my business, what I did differently this time is I expected to get bored because I'm somebody that does love change. And I think like a lot of what we learn is like find your passion or like, you know, people are, what do they say? Do what you love and you're like never work a day. So mm-hmm. It's like we're taught that like there's this one thing that we're going to fall in love with and then everything will feel great. And for me, I think the first business, because it felt like that thing, and then all of a sudden it wasn't that thing anymore, it really woke me up to like, no, Mal, your whole life you've gotten bored. Like you've always known the right time to move on from things, even dance. Like I went from dance studio to like hip hop cruise, even that I knew when to quit. So for me, it was realizing that's going to be part of my cycle versus being like, oh, this is the thing that I'm forever passionate about. And I think that's something that right now, like everyone gets tricked into like, you have to niche really hard to build a business. And then that's where you often end up being like, wait, there's no space for me to evolve, right? Mm. Because I'm just this specific thing to my audience. Whereas for me, I'm like, I'm gonna get bored of, maybe it's business coaching in waves, right? Like maybe I'm going to get bored of making courses, but so it's like, how can I set myself up so that those things can continue past me or I can sub in people into roles where I don't have to do the day-to-day of something like the courses. I can step back and be like, oh, that part of my business can survive. I don't have to burn it down just because I'm bored.
Can you give a lay of the land of where your businesses sit? Because you're kind of in a good way all over the place a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, what do you mean by
diversified is a nice way to put that.
Yeah. So Josh and I run a real estate team. So basically we built his real estate career through social media. And then now we have a team so that he can be a little bit out of the day-to-day realtor stuff. So I kind of guide like the brand for that business and come up with a lot of the marketing. I do some of the staging, but that's honestly just like more like a hobby. Like I like making things pretty. So sometimes when they have to stage, I'm like, I'll do it. But so we have the real estate team together. I would say my primary role there is, like I said, owning like the brand. So I've made a lot of like templates for things like the Instagram account so that everything feels consistent. And then honestly, kind of like being a business coach in that business. Like Josh, good and bad, he has like a built-in business coach. I think it's probably so annoying, but he loves it. But I'm
hey,
like,
if it works.
Yeah, he the athlete side of him like loves a coach, right? So in that business, I'm always really like pushing him and keeping him accountable. And then same with our team there. And then in terms of my business, so it's kind of a mix of like creator and educator, I would say. So on the creator side, I do some brand partnership stuff. I do have some affiliates. And then I just like love to make content. Like that's kind of always been my first love. Like I was sharing stuff before there was any business behind it. And then I also teach like workshops, programs. Sometimes I host accelerators and everything's around how to build your business in a sustainable way. And then often I do talk about social media because it's something I find so many business owners struggle with. And it's something that I just like love teaching. So I have a lot of programs and courses around social media and how to build your business and then do some one-on-one coaching with that as well. This summer is our first summer renting out our cottage. So we do have a short-term rental that we're really excited about. We bought it 2 years ago. So it's our first time bringing people in, but I'm really excited about like the potential of that as a business as well. I think that's the businesses.
Which sounds like, especially like I know your community is like a lot of business builders. Like ours are like, mm-hmm. You know, girls, we have a ton of girls in college. We have moms. We have like a lot of women who are just, you know, working the 9-to-5 job. And to them, that might seem like a lot. But I think what we all need to keep in mind is you going through that burnout has allowed you to create these boundaries in your life and in your business that truly proves that you can be successful at whatever it is, whoever's listening to this, you know, what you're doing right now, you can be successful, but also have that aspect of taking care of yourself, which is the number one thing that Jill and I believe is that baseline, which I think you've discovered to actually creating the life that you want and desire and being successful at the same time.
Totally. I think it's so easy to like chase the money, as I said. And I think what ends up happening is maybe you do get a really big successful company, but then you maybe don't enjoy it, or the rest of your life feels like it's falling apart. A lot of people, it's their health, right? They sacrifice their health to build that business, and it's just not worth it. Like, if you can just go slow and steady at whatever you're doing, especially if you're someone that is multi-passionate, I think that's part of it. It's like, I think people will look at my stuff and be like, oh, she like built a really successful thing, and then like close that and then build the next one, and like that's now running, and then build the next one. No, like we've been like simultaneously slowly building these things. And part of that is because I know if I did only one of them, I would get bored. And that's been like an important thing in my business of like I love business coaching, but if I had a business that was just wake up and coach every day, all day, like I would no longer enjoy it. Right.
Right.
If I had a business that was just a creator and just like brand partnerships, eventually I wouldn't like it either. Right. So I think it's important to build that way.
On the creator side, I think one of the things you do so well is just share the reality of your life, and it becomes very relatable to so many others. And two things you've shared that you've kind of claimed have really improved your life are, one, giving up alcohol, and two, giving up candy. Yeah. So I think the first one, giving up alcohol, you've given up alcohol for 2 years, and then candy is about 1 year. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through? I mean, you can go on Mal's social media and see, but your decision to remove alcohol and how that's impacted your life.
Okay, so both of those started as like, I would call them like gut adventures or experiments. Alcohol especially, it was just, for me, felt like an unpredictable experience. In a lot of ways, like I would find sometimes I could like drink a little and my stomach would just like start hurting so much. And it would be really frustrating because in that night you'd be like, oh, now I'm just thinking about my stomach hurting and I'm like no longer present. And I didn't really need like a drink or two if I knew that's what was going to happen. But it wasn't consistent, right? It wasn't like, oh, wine does this to me, or, you know, rum does this. So I think that was part of what I was getting frustrated with. And the same of just like realizing like alcohol would hit me differently sometimes. Of again, you know, you have like two drinks of wine sometimes and you're like, whoa, I'm like pretty tipsy. And then other times you could like drink all night and you're like, I don't even feel it. And same with the next day, right? Like sometimes I would just not feel great even if I didn't drink a lot. So I think the unpredictable nature of that for me was a big part of it. Felt like I was rolling the dice every time, and I was just a little tired of that. And I also felt like, so I was like 20, probably turning 29, I guess, when I did that. And I was also like, at some point, I feel like it's embarrassing to me that I'm like having a few, like not knowing how tipsy something's going to make me. Like I didn't like that feeling anymore of being like 30 and feeling like, it's not about not handling your alcohol, you know, but you're like, oh, I'm like more drunk at this event than I would like to be, right? So I think that was like a really big part for me. And then I tried to do a little bit of research on like the impact for your gut on that. And a lot of the bigger things said like 6 to 9 months. So I'm like, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I want to give it a real try, because I find with my gut being more sensitive, I never know, like, you know, will a little dairy bother it the same as if I had dairy every day? And same with alcohol. I'm like, if I say, okay, I'm going to drink once a month, like, is that still enough in my system that it's not letting it clear out? So for me, I was like, okay, I'll do 9 months, which to me is basically a year. So I just said a year because it felt easier. I do really well with, like, it's funny because I'm such a nuanced person, but with these things, I really need the black and white. Like people would be like, oh, you don't want to drink a little. I'm like, no, because what is a little? Like it's really hard to define, right? And I find it escalates very easily. So I was like, I'll do a year alcohol free. And I think about 8 months in, we had an all-inclusive like 60-person wedding in Mexico for Josh's best friend. And that was always in my mind the thing of like, maybe I'll drink then. And then once we got there, I was like, I'm just going to take it day by day. And it was actually the best thing ever to be sober for. And Josh actually did it sober with me. That was like, he stopped drinking like a month before that.
King. He is a king.
I know.
We're the Josh fans.
My boyfriend would be like, are you sure you don't want one with me? Like,
no, he's ever.
Praise Josh.
But this is the thing, like he was so curious, right? Because he was watching me and then I would talk about the different benefits. And like, he was just like, this sounds so good, right? So I think that is part of it with being open, is if you have someone right in front of you where you're like, wait, that's looking real good right now, I think it makes it a bit easier. Yeah, we were both sober for the whole time. We just drank virgin drinks. And like a lot of people didn't even know, like we weren't hiding it, but people would forget that we weren't drinking because we were like still just as much fun on the dance floor. And it's kind of funny to me. It feels like a secret when you're sober because you can be like just as silly and goofy And people don't know that it's not the alcohol. And it just feels like this like nice little secret. And you're like, but I get to go have a good sleep.
And
I'll sleep
in the morning. And wake up fresh. Yeah.
So we would dance like all night long. If anything, I actually found I was more confident in the end being sober, which is so funny because we think we're like more free when we have a little buzz, but it was like on the dance floor, I was like, I'm not going to fall over. Like I'm good, you know? So you're like a little more bold. It obviously helps that everyone around is like hammered. Cause you're like, whatever, no one's going to remember if I look silly, but just like really realizing that was like more empowering than I realized. Something I hadn't really thought about, and this might be a bit more specific to me, but I think some people can probably relate, is like, also this was right after I like grew a lot on Instagram. And so when we went to the wedding, there was even a few people on the bride's side that like followed me on Instagram. And like, it also just felt so peaceful to know, like, I'm not going to make a fool of myself in front of any of these people like all week long. And that also had a really nice like peace to it. I think we've all had those nights where we wake up the next day and we're like, oh my God, like, was I embarrassing? And so I've just really started to enjoy more and more, like knowing that I'm like present for all of those things. It's really interesting sometimes when you're like talking to drunk people too, you'll realize like, oh, they're like telling me like depths of their soul right now. And I don't know if they're going to know tomorrow, but I know. And that's like an interesting thing, but it really made me aware of just like how we almost like go into this other universe. And so it's just been nice for me to be like, I'm just me. I can still be a lot of fun. I also think people think that of like, they need it to be fun, and just realizing like, well, I don't have it. It's not an option. So let's like see how the night goes. And sometimes you just need a cute cocktail in your hand and it feels a lot better.
I'm sure that's also made such an impact on how you are feeling on your Mondays, how you're doing in your business. Because I will tell you right now, like I've had situations in which we go out on a Saturday night and I'm feeling slow on Monday.
Yeah. Well, everyone has like the Aura rings now. And like,
Jill's one.
There's like a whoopee something. Anyways, but like everyone always tells me now, like every time they drink, even if it's a little, that their sleep score is just like the worst thing ever.
Well, yeah. And I always say, like, obviously knowing a lot about the gut, alcohol doesn't do anything good for the gut. Right? So taking it out is only benefiting your digestive system and benefiting then also your sleep, your mood, anxiety, things like that too. So you've been on this journey for 2 years now. Obviously, no one likes to label things like that, but are you just continuing to do it and just see what happens? Or are you like firm in the fact that like you're not continuing to drink?
Kind of both. I'm like firm in it, but also it's almost like you said, like it doesn't bring much good. And I think when you've got over the hard part of being like, no, I can be like a good time, or I can make a cute mocktail and like get the same feeling that I'm often looking for, it doesn't really tempt me in those ways. And then you just think, I also think now like my stomach would probably be wrecked if I drank, right?
It's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, it's like, we don't know her. She's right here. So I think that's part of what also just keeps it that way. Cause I feel like, you know, people will say like, oh, what about like champagne for special occasions? But it's like, once we separate what alcohol means to us, I'm like, I don't actually need the champagne in the same way. Like, I actually find I don't really drink like alcohol, non-alcoholic beers or like non-alcoholic wines. Cause like, for me, I'm not trying to replace that thing. I just like no longer need that category, if that makes sense.
I love how it just feels like, it doesn't feel, you have really prided yourself on personal development. And I feel like that's really led the way for everything you've done, whether it's a health change, whether it's a business change, whatever it may be. For everyone listening, feeling inspired, do you have books, influencers, podcasts? Like, who would you say go follow, go read if you want to start this journey? Who have been people or books that have impacted you?
That's a great question. My friend Alexis has a really great book called Find Your Fuck Yeah. And it's really good for anyone feeling like lost, or also in this like in between of like, I feel like everyone's a personal brand now in some ways, the way we show up online. And it has really good conversations and helping around that, especially if you're multi-passionate. Like, it's something that really helped me be like, oh, okay, just think of it as like, I'm an artist and my art is allowed to change and things like that. She also has one thing that I love that you can read more on, but she talks about how your weaknesses are your strengths, either over amplified or underused. And like, that alone has been so helpful, right? Like if you're like an outspoken person, let's say, like if you overuse, like a weakness could be maybe you're like too aggressive and too loud about it sometimes, right? Or that's something that's just really stuck with me. If so many of the things that I'm really good at also show up as my weaknesses when I'm like underusing or overusing them, right? That's a really great one. Psychology of money is really interesting to just understand people or like your relationship with money. It's like a money book that I would say is not really about money. Like it's not going to talk to you about tax accounts. It's more about understanding how people work in general and like your own relationship with money. Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert is like an older book, but it's, I feel like, a classic. It often will just, it has enough different points in it that it'll like give you something you need, you know? I think that's probably...
I'll say one for you that I think you've talked about a decent amount. Is it The Power of One or something like that? Don't you love that? The One Thing. You like that one, right?
Yeah, The One Thing is really good. I would say less for like quote unquote personal development, but more for like figuring your shit out. So like its focus is like, what's the one thing that could move the needle? So especially if you do have a lot of goals, or even if it's like a fitness or gut goal, it really helps you figure out like, am I doing a lot of busy work to pretend I'm doing something? Or like, what's the thing that will actually have impact? And that's been really, really helpful. And then otherwise, I feel like personal development wise, actually, it's more so like tools for me, like Human Design is something that really helped me. I wouldn't say I like reference it as much anymore, but it was something that just like validated so much of me and like allowed me to then kind of move on from things that would hold me back. Some people really like Enneagram. It wasn't a big one for me. And like energy healing was another good thing that I did, because I find a lot of us too, like something like therapy can be either not enough or not feel like a fit, because maybe you know how to like mask your feelings too much. Like you're never going to say the things. And what I found really interesting about energy healing is like things would come up for me where I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was an issue. But like doing that process like brought things to the forefront where I was like, oh, that's something like deep down I need to work on.
Well, I think that's great.
Yeah.
I know this is a little different than our normal episodes, but I do feel like part of what we say is when a lot of people find us because you're sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. But then there's a large, large group that doesn't realize they feel sick and tired. And I think that's really what happened to you.
Yes.
And your ability to really look internal, grow. Josh, grow with you, because we're Team Josh. we love you. We obviously follow you really closely. And if you're listening to this episode and you don't follow Mal, can you share your socials so that way they can do that?
Yeah, I'm pretty much at Mallory Rowan everywhere. So mallyrowan.com or at Mallory Rowan on Instagram and TikTok.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.